You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. To get more in-depth analysis and commentary from our scholars, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast on iTunes, download on Stitcher, or find on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much to all of you for coming to this very special event. And we say it is a very special event not only because of the high-level officials that we have in the panel today representing Brazil, Argentina, Peru, Costa Rica, and the U.S., all of whom I want to thank very specially for being here with us, not only because this is a joint effort between the Brookings Global Cities Latin America Initiative, ESPLA for short, and the integration and trade sector at the Inter-American Development Bank. And another very, very special thank you to my colleague and friend, Anthony Esteva de Ordal of the IDB. This event really would not have been possible without him. Not only because the topic of discussion, the future of trade integration in the Americas, but also because we will be discussing this topic at a very, very special moment. At a time when the WTO negotiations appear paralyzed and the new mega-regional agreements like the TPP and the TTIP are under fire. In fact, as a recent Washington Post article correctly affirms, the trade issue has become a leading scapegoat for the lost jobs and the stagnating working-class wages, and rejiggering bad deals has become a common premise to restore middle-class prosperity. As Professor Ken Rogoff accurately describes, we live at a time of anti-trade populism. In such an environment, here we are trying to bring new ideas to the fore that have the potential of rekindling the spirit of integration in the Americas. I am sure that our panelists will have much to say from the perspective of their own countries. From the Brookings perspective, our role is to promote innovative ideas, and to that end, we contributed with a proposal that will be available at our website and is entitled Towards a New Trans-American Partnership. This partnership idea is based on two pillars. First, promoting convergence of existing free trade agreements. 11 Latin American countries already have free trade agreements with the U.S. 7 of them have free trade agreements with Canada and several agreements among them. So the first pillar is to try to harmonize the rules of origin with full cumulations such that goods and services will be able to circulate freely among the countries with FTAs. And the second pillar is to implement a hemispheric-wide trade facilitation agenda such that goods and services can circulate among the countries that currently have FTAs and those that do not yet have them, like the Mercosur countries. By building on existing FTAs and ongoing negotiations on trade facilitation regimes, and by starting out with a modest agenda to increase trade and investment and stimulate the development of global supply chains in the region, this is, in our view, a pragmatic yet very powerful way of deepening integration in the Americas. If successful, it would comprise 1 billion consumers and have a combined GDP of $25 trillion, 40% larger than the European Union, and more than twice the size of China. At a time when the forces of protectionism, isolationism, nationalism, identity politics, and xenophobia are gathering strength in Western democracies, the Americas can become a beacon of light and send a message to the world that we are not about to give up on one of the most powerful instruments humankind has ever known to promote peace and prosperity among nations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ernesto. My name is Antoni Esteve de Ordal. I'm the manager of the integration and trade sector at the Inter-American Development Bank, and we are very pleased that we have been able to co-organize this with our friends and colleagues here at the Brookings. Just a brief remarks before introducing the speakers, just following what Ernesto has mentioned. Looking at the trade architecture that we have today in our region, it's very similar what's happening in the region to what's happening in the rest of the world. So it's the problems that we have in terms of building up a fully coherent architecture in terms of trade here, it's very similar to what happened in the rest of the world. There are kind of four, and this is what we look with Ernesto in the paper, there are kind of four levels in which we can act in terms of rebuilding and restarting this trade agenda, from more complex issues to less complex issues, complex from the point of view of technical issues and also politically, the political feasibility of doing it. First of all, there's still what we call in the paper a lot of missing links. There's a lot of countries in this hemisphere and also in the rest of the world that don't have yet FTAs. And there's progress being made. And Ernesto mentioned some of them around the world. Here in our region, there's obvious cases like Brazil and Mexico, or Brazil and Argentina and the United States. And I think our panelists will, or even Peru, and our panelists will talk a little bit about what efforts are being made in trying to connect countries that today do not have FTAs. As we know, this is very complicated. It's complicated technically, and it's complicated politically. The second level of action is what we call go beyond existing levels of rules to more deeper rules in terms of agreements. The example of the TPP is a classical case here. The 12 countries that have negotiated the TPP, which is pending ratification, most of them had already some sort of FTAs among themselves, almost all of them, not all. What the TPP has done is really to push the frontier in terms of rules to another level. So this is the second level in which countries can act in that type of trade agenda. The third level is what Ernesto, and this is where our proposal comes, which is becoming a little bit less much easy to do, which is to give more efficiency to the current regime. It doesn't need to do new FTAs necessarily, but you have to put more efficiency into the system. And there's many ways to doing that. We just put one specific example where we think is the priority, which is this technical concept of harmonizing the rules of origin of existing FTAs and providing some accumulation to facilitate what we call today this regional value change in the region. It requires some negotiation, but is not a full-fledged trade negotiation. And the last step in this continuum of actions is the trade facilitation agenda. This is a little bit, it's complicated technically, it's a little bit more palatable politically. And this agenda is also being implemented in different ways throughout the region. So there's lots of things happening in that region, and we are proposing that the region should really re-engage as a whole hemisphere, starting from the most easy ways of doing it, the most politically feasible, to the most complex one. And to do that and to have these conversations, we really have a stellar panel here with a very good representation of different trade agendas in the region. And I'm going to introduce very briefly the panelists. You have a full bios in your papers. To my left, Daniel Godinho is the Secretary of Foreign Trade of the Ministry at the Ministry of Development, Industry and Foreign Trade of Brazil. Thank you, Daniel, for being here. Next to him is John Fonseca. He's the Vice Minister of Trade of Costa Rica. He's also the chief negotiator for this country. Next, Miguel Brown is the Secretary of Commerce at the Ministry of Production of Argentina, newly appointed and with a lot of work ahead. And we are very happy that you are here, Miguel. Magali Silva is the Minister of Trade of Peru. Thank you, Magali, for being with us.
And tourism.
Interim. Just as of today.
Tourism.
And finally, but last but not least, is Ken Hyatt, which is the Deputy Undersecretary at the Department of Commerce. I'm very happy that you are also joining us. So what we will do is we will let the speakers to use, you know, 5-8 minutes of initial times to make some initial remarks from the perspective of each individual country, how they see this trade agenda currently, and also how it looks like looking forward. Daniel, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, first, to have me here, for the invitation to allow me to share our perspective on all those issues with you. As some of you might know, Brazil launched a national exports plan last year, which, of course, brings a lot of trade initiatives, trade actions, and goals, of course. But which most important goal is definitely to increase the Brazilian participation in global value chains. And Brazil does not believe that we can achieve this goal without having a stronger regional global chains. And this is why it's so important. It is so important to us to discuss these kind of issues here with colleagues from the region. I agree with the Spanish assumption that we are not close to have, in the near future at least, a wide trade initiative in the Americas, as in the Americas, as we did in the past with FTAA. I'm sorry, but that does not prevent us from having or pursuing very concrete, creative, and why not ambitious trade goals, trade initiatives. We believe that those initiatives will eventually help us paving the way back again to a wide trade initiative. Why not again a whole atmosphere negotiation, trade negotiation? Why not? But we have to build this way somehow, and this is what we are precisely doing at this moment. Brazil is doing its part, as I tend or try to prove you. Just to mention a few examples on trade negotiations, we are currently trying to build a completely new trade agenda with our Argentinians colleagues. Obvious we're doing that. And we had so far like 20, 30 meetings in 2 months. And we're trying hard to build a very modern trade agenda with Peru. We hope to finalize, to conclude an ambitious trade negotiations on issues such as investments, services, trade facilitation, government procurement, a subject in which Brazil does not have a single agreement, international agreement, by the way, and also the possible anticipation of some of the schedule, the free trade schedule that we would be seeing completed only in 2019. We have a round next week in Peru, and we hope to conclude this negotiation process. And with the U.S., under our bilateral commercial dialogue, we've been achieving great results in terms of market access using trade facilitation tools and standards cooperation aspects. I would like to share some more detailed thoughts on that with you later. I hope I still have some time. But getting back to the panel's main point, to try to find which would be those agendas on the short run to be worked by all of us together in order to have a regional trade agenda. First, on rules of origin, I think it's a great agenda. I think it's a great idea. I would only recommend that it needs to take more time. In order to have government's appetite to discuss this kind of issue, first we need to create the problem. And the problem is not a problem. The problem is more trade agreements. I mean, Brazil still needs to complete a trade ambitious agreement with Mexico, for instance, with Canada, with the U.S., and there are a number of other examples. And then we will be able to tackle the issue of rules of origin, which is, of course, very, very important. The costs associated with compliance of different rules of origin are known. I'm not going to explain it to you because you all know that. But here I do believe that we still need more trade agreements, and this is what, again, we are trying to do right now. And then I get to trade facilitation. I believe that this is the most important topic to be tackled on the short run by all of us together. We have to do it together. We are doing it together. We have As I also would like to discuss a bit later, Red Vuse, you know, the Inter-American Network for Single Widow Initiatives, and we're doing something bilaterally as well. And this, I believe, is the most important topic to be dealt with regionally on the short run. So this would be my just first few remarks, and I hope to get back to all these issues later.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Daniel. John?
Yeah, thank you very much. I would like to start by thanking the Brookings Institution and the Inter-American Development Bank for this event and for the very important topic for the region. Well, I think to give some context, our region historically usually try to open the markets and try to increase trade basically with the main regions of the world, with North America, Europe, China. And it makes sense. I mean, they have the best acquisitive population, and they have huge markets. So they make it, that make it really interesting for our region. I think, or at least I would not like to talk about the historical mistakes we did as a region, but definitely that behavior brings some challenges in the for the near future. As a region, we bet for exporting to these countries and these regions basically commodities, and as a region, we specialized in commodities. So right now we have the challenge how to move from there, how to increase the added value of our exportations, and how to start becoming more competitive in other areas of the global value chain. And that's exactly the challenges we perceive. And to be able to increase the linkages between the countries from Latin America, we believe that there is some big challenges. One of the challenges, I think, is the data-driven public policy making. As a region, usually we are not used to use the new tools we have in place to do policy making, and they're in place already. So I think that's a huge challenge we have as a region, and how to link that, how to mix that, how to analyze the strength of each of the countries of the region, how to better understand how can we link our strengths as a region, and how to reduce cost for production. And in this area, I think one of the main topics definitely is trade facilitation. In Central America, we are now trying to implement a whole strategy for trade facilitation, and which includes coordinated border management and includes reduction of processes and best practices in procedures and single window alternatives as a region. And I think that's exactly what we should be thinking about right now. It's not, well, it's possible because that's the way it is. Right now it's cheaper to do trade with China than with some countries from Latin America between each other. It's cheaper to export to the United States, to European Union, to export, in our case, from Costa Rica to Guatemala, which is just couple of thousand kilometers from our country. And the demand we receive and the analysis we did is that as a country we need to increase the integration, the regional integration from Costa Rica. And the gaps we find, it's basically that the cost of doing trade between the region is really high. So I understand that the free trade agreements between the region will help, definitely. But If I must focus in one area, it will be trade facilitation, because we need to make it feasible, to give it financial feasibility to the operations between the region. And for that, yeah, we need the agreements, the free trade agreements or other alternatives. But the main challenge is how to reduce cost for the operations. And the other issue is how to analyze the alternatives between the region. And in my perspective, that's data-driven policymaking from each of the countries. How in this area, I think the academic institutions and international organizations can help a lot. How to analyze the region as a single region, as a country. How can we define which are the strengths of each country and how to mix them? And why not to think about regional value change? We have in place already the TPP and other regional alternatives. And basically, that's the analysis. Who is going to produce what, and what are the different strengths, and how to mix them. In general, those are the two main areas, data-driven policymaking and trade facilitation. I hope that will give at least the beginning of the information to the debate. And I hope that's the time I have, because we only have 8 minutes, right?
Thank you very much, John. Miguel, it's your turn. I'm sure there's a lot of appetite here to listen about the new policies in Argentina, so it's your turn.
Thank you, Tony. I'm really pleased to be here. It's fantastic. I was here in Washington 6 weeks ago, also talking with our counterparts in the Commerce Department and other areas, and also talking at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and several government officials and business people from Argentina have been traveling around, and our main message is that Argentina is back. And so my job really consists of resetting and relaunching many of the trade agreements that we have, the trade relationships that we have with different countries, and of course working seriously on the agenda for trade facilitation, which I agree with my colleagues that is the most important thing we can do here and now, today, to improve trade. We can really work to reduce costs for our companies, especially this will be good for our small and medium enterprises that find it many times very difficult. It will increase the size of the market for these companies, and therefore it will make them more productive and generate more investment and more jobs. A great majority of jobs are created in small and medium enterprises, so really pushing for trade facilitation is not only an economic priority, but it's also a political priority. So I'm very, very fortunate to be the Secretary of Commerce of Argentina, because the benchmark is very low. I start from a position, you know, exports and imports have fallen. Please, measure us against the, 2015 is the benchmark. You should measure us all for that. Argentina is importing and exporting 25% less than 4 years ago. We haven't moved forward in trade agreements with many of our partners. In fact, we've moved backwards. We've been sanctioned in the WTO by the U.S., Japan, and the European Union for our import restriction practices, which were completely arbitrary and illegal. And that's where we're starting from. We have a lot to do moving forward. In the past months, I have been here in the U.S., in Europe, in Brazil. Daniel has also been in Buenos Aires. I've been in Mexico. This week, in fact, today, a part of my team is in Colombia working to expand our trade agreement with Colombia. So we're really following President Macri's instruction, are being very proactive in sending this message that we want to re-engage constructively with different countries in order to deepen our trade agreements. I agree with Daniel that really, you know, trade agreements take a long time. They take a lot of work. They've become more complex in the past couple of decades. Now we don't just talk about tariffs. We talk about many other disciplines, which require a lot of specialization and a lot of capacity. And many times that capacity is not present in the state. I have to say, I mean, in Argentina over the past 10 years, since we haven't been negotiating many of these agreements, we have to go out into the market and talk to companies, talk to academics, etc., who have specialized in these areas in order to be able to really work seriously on these issues. That's why Daniel wants to move fast with the agreements. he knows I don't know anything yet. So I have to say, we have a huge work cut out for our group. We're moving very quickly. And in terms of trade facilitation, we already are working with the IDB in order to create a single window in Argentina. We're behind many of our colleagues, but we want to move forward quickly, and hopefully we'll be able to have part of that interoperational with other countries as well, sort of to leapfrog in that direction. We're also working to simplify many of the import requirements, for instance, for capital goods and other areas. We are making it easier for courier companies to work in Argentina, and that is something that a couple of weeks ago also we, together with Tony and his team, we hosted a seminar in Argentina on the Inter-American Dialogue.
America's Business Dialogue.
Business Dialogue, yeah. I'm learning all these new names, so this is very, very, very exciting. And in this meeting, really, we had a fantastic meeting of minds of government officials, private sector companies, all working towards improving trade facilitation. So our agenda from the point of view of Argentina is to really move forward bilaterally with our main trading partners. I was saying that with the U.S., we've signed two agreements. One of them is a TIFA, a Trade and Investment Facilitation Agreement. We've also signed a commercial dialogue with the Commerce Department. With Japan, we're working towards signing also a commercial dialogue with the METI, the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry. We've opened discussions with Mexico to broaden our commercial agreement under the ALADI rules. With Brazil, we have a huge agenda, and we're working very well with Daniel and his team to move forward. So in that context, I'm sure that we're going to be able to discuss broader trade agreements. In fact, Mercosur, I think, is moving forward with the European Union. This is something Daniel announced. The good news, in fact, in Nassau, in the IDB conference. And we're going to be exchanging offers. Also, we hope to move forward with Mercosur, with the Pacific Alliance. That might take a bit longer, but we definitely want to work in that direction. I'm traveling to Canada tomorrow to explore the possibility of having discussions with Mercosur and Canada. So we're very optimistic that not only at a bilateral level, but also at a multilateral level, we can really get the trade negotiation agenda moving forward. And, of course, the trade facilitation agenda, as I was saying, we're working on right now. I have to say I'm also lucky not only because the benchmark is low in Argentina, but because the comparison bar is very high looking at other countries. Over the past decade, my colleagues here and my counterparts from other countries in Latin America have really moved forward at a fantastic speed. I mean, it's really... I was remembering the famous toast that John Maynard Keynes gave to the professionals at the UK Treasury Department, and I think his words were, "I drink to you who are the guarantors not of civilization, but of the possibility of civilization." That's because, you know, Keynes had all his Bloomsbury Group friends. He thought civilization were artists, painters, etc. But really, you know, the Treasury people were the guarantors of the possibility of civilization. Well, the same, I believe, is I'm really lucky to become a part of this group of fantastic people who over the past decade have set the basis for the possibility of more and more integrated development in our country. So thank you very much, and it's an honor to be here among you. Thank you.
Thank you, Miguel. Thank you very much. And we will go deeper to some of the topics that you raised. And next to you, there's a person who really has been at the forefront yes. of this. So I'm sure that you will be able to learn a lot. Magali from Peru.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Tony. Thanks to the Brookings Institution. An honor to be here. Last time I was in the States, it was in Atlanta. We left at 6 o'clock in the morning when we closed the TPP. It was a great day for us 12 economies that worked for more than 5 years under the leadership of Mike Froman, which is it's been a great pleasure to work with them. And over those years, we learned so much. We had times where we had lost everything. And as you said before, that trade agreements or free trade agreements nowadays are more complicated than ever, because we're not only talking about trade, about creating jobs, about generating value added in the economy. We're talking about bringing consensus or what, about other things. In the case of Peru, we learned to, you know, fight for our environment. We introduced IP, the chapter of IP, when we first signed our FTA with the U.S. A long time ago, 2009, finally it was signed. But since then, free trade agreements have been more complicated. And this TPP, I just want you to know, for all of you that might not really know, the TPP is the first agreement in the world that has touched the center or the most important part of our structure, of our production system, which is the SMEs. The TPP has a special chapter that we worked among all those 12 countries to create these possibilities for SMEs to engage in the global value chains. There's no more agreements that are not looking on a practical basis, looking for really the possibilities for them to meet each other. We're working on databases. We're working on networking of SMEs. We're part of APEC. As you know, the 12 economies are part of the 21 economies that belong to APEC. Peru is hosting the APEC meeting now. The MTR, the Ministers of Trade, meeting is going to be in Peru in a few weeks, and that we're going to have a meeting with the 12 economies, the 12 partners, just to show the progress that we have been doing in engaging SMEs in looking for real opportunities for business. So I'm glad to hear it, and I'd like to say welcome back, Argentina, to you. I'm very happy because Argentina is an extremely important part of us. We miss you, Argentina.
That's right.
Really miss you. But and as you know, we were one of the ones that went there and asked, so what's going on your agenda? We want to, you know, reinitiate our commercial relationships. We not only have commercial relationships, but also historic and the relationships that are, you know, of common history together. We have, as you know, the Capacñán, which is the Inca route, and that united most of us, most of the countries in Latin America. With Costa Rica, we are united because of the Pacific Alliance, who is also part of the Pacific Alliance. And out of our 42 countries that are observing, that want to be part of the Pacific Alliance, Costa Rica is one of the ones that has in the first position to be part, because it has already the status of more than observer. It's can't remember the term, but it's more than observer. So plus observer plus. And so we're working on that. 11 countries out of those 42 observers that want to be part of the Pacific Alliance are expecting, are waiting. And this, in a couple of weeks, starting May 1st, we're going to have the official birth, not birth, but operating of the Pacific Alliance, because that would mean, that means that after May 1st, 92% of our whole basket, the basket that includes manufacturing, agriculture, fishing products, will have liberalized at tariff zero. That means that, for example, if you are an SME that are producing metal mechanic parts for parts of engine, for example, on May 1st, automatically, if you were an exporting to Mexico, that will cost 8% less. So 8% less is a shot of competitivity, productivity in SMEs, and that will allow them to engage in a bigger part of production, which, for example, would be part of an engine. Mexico will export those cars to the U.S. So this is the how we're building those blocks. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that in the case of Peru, while we were negotiating the FTA with the U.S., two-thirds of the country, two-thirds of our population, were favoring trade. Trade has meant for Peru the reduction of poverty from more than 50 to less than 23% in the last 10 years. And in the case of the trade sector in my country, we followed a plan, the only strategic plan that the country has followed nonstop through three governments, Toledo, Garcia, Humala, for just showing the path that free trade was the route to create more jobs and obviously to include more people. Because the reason that we, in this government, we have been able to apply inclusion policies is exactly because we accumulated those resources for us to be able to build routes, build infrastructure, construct, and unite the country for us to be able to continue growing. We are really sure that and hope that the TPP will be approved in the U.S., as many of you, I guess, and that it's, you know, we will be, with the TPP, will be part of, Peru will be part of the 40%, the biggest 40% of the country. And I don't want to forget, Daniel, that Brazil, as Daniel already said, we have been working the whole 2015, right? Cup meetings going to Brazil, coming to Peru with the minister also. And this is the first time that Brazil would be finishing a chapter on public procurement. And we are ready to be engaged with other countries that want to follow us. We are still waiting for an answer from India. We've been started already. We will start, if we get the affirmation, the answer, that we will start our number 25 FTA, because 17 are already into force. But with India would be the number 25 free trade agreement. So I would like to leave it there.
Thank you very much, Miley. Ken, the view from the U.S.
Great. Thank you again to Brookings, to the IDB. Let me echo what many have said as we've worked our way down the panel. As we think about the trade agenda more broadly, and certainly with respect to the hemisphere, we are driven by a couple of principles. One, the SME. Take the lens of the SME and ask, how can we support SMEs as they grow and thrive? If you look at the data, at least in the United States, you look back a couple of years, I've seen data which said in, I think it was 13 or 14, that fully two-thirds of all the net new job creation in the U.S. was generated by SMEs. Mm-hmm. So there's this real focus on the SME as an engine of job creation. One. Second, this sort of notion of competitiveness, and how do we think about trade policy in the context of competitiveness? And that can either be take cost out of the system, all the trade facilitation that we've been talking about, But competitiveness and trade and investment can also link to innovation, which is a totally different path towards competitiveness. And, you know, there have been times when people have separated these. Mm-hmm. There's the trade folks and the folks who are worried about investment and the folks who are worried about innovation. These can form a very virtuous cycle together. Mm-hmm. Trade connecting companies, investment connecting companies. We live in a world where innovation is now happening globally. So I think that competitiveness has both the cost aspect and then it also has an innovation piece. And the third thing which we've been talking about is this question of supply chains and also how they're shifting over time, right? We've lived in a world with very long global supply chains, and there are events of the past number of years which have said there is risk to business in very, very long global supply chains. And so there are lots of companies now who are actually asking, how do we really think about consolidating our supply chain? Are we willing to put the risk that exists if I'm in a global supply chain? But nevertheless, all the conversation we've been having on the trade facilitation front goes to how do I make it easier for imports and exports to go into in and out of countries? Because obviously, if I can't go in or going in has high cost or is complex, then countries end up not being part of that supply chain because the country or the company simply says too much cost, too much complexity. So those are sort of what's guiding us as we talk about these. And then just briefly, sort of three then areas of focus. What are we doing multilaterally? What are we doing plurilaterally? And what are we doing bilaterally? The multilateral, and no one's really, I think, talked about it, is the trade facilitation agreement. But it goes to what we've been talking about, but it's a multilateral agreement, and there's a lot of focus now on let's make certain everyone who needs to approves that agreement. And I think we're all sort of together in sort of pushing for that. On the plurilateral side, the TPP, which you've talked about, an area of focus, and I share we are committed to getting it passed, and we're working hard to get it passed. And again, we really do view it as a 21st century agreement that not only talks about tariffs and not only talks about SMEs, but also embeds labor and environmental protections, right, so that we can use the trade agreement and support excellent labor and environmental practice. There is e-commerce in it, right, which is very important. So it's an important trade deal because, as said, not only do we incorporate a large part of the world, but we also set the kind of trading and investment rules that we think are where we should go with them. And then the final piece is the bilateral engagement. And Daniel and I have been working for 2 years and asking and then trying to answer, and I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later, is how do we understand what's important to Brazil, what's important to the U.S., and how do we find business solutions to business problems? Mm-hmm. Let's listen to the private sector, have the private sectors of our countries help us, and then identify very concrete things we can work about. So we actually don't negotiate with each other, or usually not. I was going to give you some advice. Because he's actually very, very good at it. But it's very much a focus on, and again, and we're working in the trade facilitation area, mm-hmm. in the standards area, in the investment area, in the regulatory area. We're talking about e-commerce. We have a very robust agenda where we, again, what's important to the private sector, where can we make progress? What's important to the private sector, where can we make progress? And they can be small, mm-hmm. can be small progress. And then we are, as you said, we're very excited to be looking forward to having the commercial dialogue with you, Argentina, and I think it's a welcome back, welcome, hello. but let me stop there.
Great. Thank you very much, Ken. So let me just start some small dialogue here before I get into the Q&A from the people from the floor. And I'll start maybe with Daniel and Ken to elaborate a little bit more of your last point, which is this. I mean, Ken and Daniel are here not only as a Secretary of Trade or as Undersecretary of Commerce, but as also co-chairs of this commercial dialogue that has been going on between Brazil and United States for the last 2 years, at least, which is sometimes not very well known. It doesn't make the headlines of a free trade agreement, but it's a very intensive
political and technical dialogue. So I'd like to maybe get a little bit deeper on this and share your views on how this process has proceeded. What have you learned? There's a big component there, and you mentioned on trade facilitation. Maybe if you could be a little bit more specific on what's there and what you're planning to achieve as part of this commercial dialogue. Maybe Daniel, and then maybe I'll get you.
Well, actually, the commercial dialogue has been there for 10 years now.
The origin.
And yes, and we've been there, Ken and I, for two years. Yeah. Yeah, well, in my humble opinion, it's a good example of how a pragmatic agenda and at the same time a very concrete agenda can be built. In my opinion, and that's personal, by the way, Brazil and the U.S. may have lost a lot of time discussing formats as opposed to contents. And it was at some point in time either an FTA or nothing. And we're trade people. We know that there's a world ahead, you can find ways to market access or whatever you feel you have to do in terms of trade using different tools with different countries. In the case of Brazil and U.S., we got to find some specific topics which are actually bringing market access results, and this is what I'd like to share with you. One of these topics is standards, as Ken has mentioned, cooperation in standards, regulatory coherence, convergence. Here we are negotiating mutual recognition agreements, sectorial agreements, as to actually either have very similar regulations or to allow mutual recognition, which would be automatically allow imports and exports without having to comply with all those very costly procedures, as we all know here. Besides that, we are trying, for instance, to get some American laboratories down to Brazil, meaning exporting U.S. services to Brazil, to have Brazilian products certificated there, certified there, to be exported back to the U.S., meaning exports of Brazilian goods to the U.S. It's a very pragmatic solution. We managed to have already a few American laboratories there. And this changes everything, because when, for instance, when we were talking about SMEs, a small company in Brazil wants to export to the U.S., tariff is not playing there. I mean, if it's an industrial product, of course. Tariffs would go as low as 1%, 2%, 3%. But then when it comes to the costs related to the compliance of regulations, then the company just gives up immediately. So by tackling these things, we are creating market access again. These are only a few examples, but then let me get back to trade facilitation, which is probably the second. I mean, these are probably the two most important issues being dealt under this commercial dialogue together with investments. There are other things there. But on trade facilitation, as Ken also already mentioned, we are working together with the private sector. It's, of course, much easier to find bottlenecks in a bilateral flow as opposed to general bottlenecks. And both our private sectors, both our companies, could point a few bottlenecks we are attacking there. One of them related to the need of paper, and paper signed in blue ink was eliminated. One can imagine the costs related to that. We were able, through our bilateral commercial dialogue, to, again, find a very concrete market access solution. We are now trying to engage our different agencies in exchange, electronic exchange of some documents important to bilateral trade. So these are only, again, some examples, but the most important thing here is that one can find concrete and pragmatic agendas. This is what we've been doing there. We will have our next dialogue meeting on June,
right?
And then for sure more results on all those topics. What we learned there is that by doing this And getting back to the first, my first comment here today, if Brazil and, US and the U.S. are doing that, we are paving the way to, we're building blocks to a greater bilateral thing in the future. Why not an FTA? Why not an FTA? But we have to build it somewhere and somehow. And by doing that, of course, we're helping the whole region in order to think again in a wide Americas initiative here.
Ken, you want to share a little bit some additional examples from the point of view of what are you getting out of this commercial dialogue?
Yeah, so again, I guess I'd say a couple things. One is no problem is too small to try to solve, right? And so there has been an orientation to say, what are practical, pragmatic solutions? So that goes everything as simple as we've created a portal so that a Brazilian company can better understand U.S. standards and regulations, and American companies can better understand Brazilian regulations and standards. Very, very simple. But again, if I'm a company, that is something that actually might help me trade in Metro and NIST. In Metro, I don't know what in Metro stands for. Our NIST, right, our National Institute of Standards and Technology, they wrote guides again, very simple guides in different sectors around what you have to do to understand the standards and regulatory side. In the standards area, we got sectors to negotiate with each other in the ceramic sector, in the health IT sector, to reach agreement on the private sectors coming together to move forward. We were able to get the patent organizations of both of our countries to agree to a pilot of something called the Patent Prosecution Highway, which is work sharing between the two patent offices, which improves the speed with which patents are approved. And again, these are very concrete, very pragmatic. And again, our agenda now is in the standards area. We're going to be sharing on e-commerce, how we're thinking about e-commerce. We have a pretty robust investment agenda to help each other invest. Brazil has helped us as we have recruited for investment promotion events here. We have talked with Apex Brazil around sectors that Brazil has an interest in drawing investment, and that's been sort of the nature of the conversation. And then the only thing I'd say is that, and again, maybe this is, you know, as we launch in Argentina, is by broadening the topics and constantly having conversations, which are there other ideas we have that we might do to drive investment and trade? Mm-hmm. What else might you do? And then really having a operating assumption, how do we create value? How do we get something done? That combination of a broad agenda, a pragmatic orientation. And again, I would say, Daniel, that there has been less, we don't negotiate with each other, right? We sort of, let me understand your concerns here and where we are creating rather than negotiating, which has been the way through the issues, which is a very different issue than arguing with each other. Mm-hmm. So those would be my couple of comments.
Very good.
Tony, I'd like to mention the example. It's just that we were talking about the single window, the example of the Pacific Alliance.
I was about to ask about this. So.
All right. Ready mine. Well, thanks to the IDB, I mean, we developed a single window in Peru, and we have the project of the interoperability of the Pacific Alliance single windows. And this is a work that, you know, as you said, not only it allows us to be independent from the mind or the participation of a public person, it's just that at the beginning, everyone thinks that losing power, because they're like the bureaucracy doesn't want to lose that. So by the time you end up convincing them, and in the case of Peru, we have 260 procedures already there, meaning more than 15 different public institutions, being customs, for example, being part of this. And we have done that. We have elevated that to the level of the four countries, both Mexico, Colombia, and Chile. And the good thing about this is that the private sector, as you mentioned, is right next to us. In the Pacific Alliance, we have the Consejo Empresarial de la Alianza del Pacífico, which means the business or the private sector council that is in real time following all the progress that we have been making and giving us the examples and the problems, as you said, or the cases to being solved in the next 2 or 3 months. We have a calendar that we follow that we have to, at least we meet 4 times a year, but if we need, we're there to consult with the private sector, and the private sector is there to ask about what is going on, if we have some delays, if some institutions, some, you know, the sanitary institutions sometimes don't act or don't react at the same speed, that there is a continuous moving and continuous showing results for the public sector, for the private sector, for them to increase their productivity and expertise.
Thank you very much, Magali. I actually was about to ask you about this trade facilitation agenda that is being has been pushed by the Pacific Alliance beyond the traditional market access liberalization that you make reference before. And, you know, I appreciate your comment here. And I will ask maybe Miguel, what is your expectation as a country that is not even an observer now, but is someone who is next to the Pacific Alliance, partners like, you know, we're boarding. What's your expectation about the relationship of you, Argentina, or Mercosur with the Pacific Alliance? I'd like if you could comment a little bit, or maybe also Magali, you could comment. There has been some exchange of potential ideas for a dialogue, very similar, I think, to the commercial dialogue that we were discussing before between Brazil and the U.S. How do you see this process going? What is the expectation from Argentina?
Well, I have to say it's very positive, and there's already discussions about Argentina becoming an observer in the Pacific Alliance. In fact, I think I have to send you a formal note. You will be receiving that soon, as soon as I get back, I think, or maybe somebody can
do it
that.
Here. You want.
Yeah, yeah.
You can give it up.
Electronically, please. No paper.
Electronic. But we need you guys to tell us how to do it. If not in that, it'll go in pen and paper. So we're very excited with that possibility, I have to say, I mean, it would be fantastic if we could set up a dialogue between Mercosur and the Pacific Alliance in order to start talking constructively about ways to move forward, both in trade facilitation and also in trade agreements. But this is something that we have to actually get together and discuss. I mean, we're a step behind that for now. At the same time, we have a lot of relationship bilaterally, no. So Brazil was saying that they're about to finalize an agreement with
in Chile.
Chile. Well, Chile has a free trade agreement with Mercosur. I've been talking with my Chilean counterparts about deepening discussions in trade and services and improving the efficiency in our huge border, which today is scandalously inefficient, not just for trade but also for tourism. I mean, tourists sometimes spend hours to cross between Chile and Argentina. So we really, I mean, we have to sit down and work on those concrete, specific issues with which we can move forward today. So I would have to say I'm very optimistic looking forward about the possibility of a broad discussion between Mercosur and the Pacific Alliance. But in the meantime, I think we have a very challenging agenda and a lot of work to do bilaterally and in trade facilitation.
One thing that you just mentioned, Miguel, and it's a little bit off topic, but not completely off topic, which is the physical connectivity. I mean, we talk a lot about the trade agreements. We talk a lot about the interoperability of the single windows, everything that helps exporters and importers to do their daily business. But actually, they have to physically cross the border. If it's not for, you know, other type of services, but still, you know, most of trade is still through our borders. And I want to ask John, because John, besides being the Vice Minister for Trade, he also chairs the Council of what is called the Borders in Costa Rica and in Mesoamerica. There's a great job being done in Mesoamerica about real physical infrastructure. This is a challenge also for other countries in the region. You mentioned some examples, Miguel. Can you describe maybe a little bit what's this agenda, how this connect with the trade, the kind of the classic trade agenda, and why it's so important also to focus on these physical connectivity issues?
Yeah. Well, basically in Central America, the case were that we are really small countries. In the case of Costa Rica, we're 4.5 million people. And that's the case of the most of the countries in Central America. The biggest one is 17 million people. So at the end, we arrive, and the presidents from the region arrived to the conclusion that to be able to do some scale economy and to be able to improve the cost of production and the competitivity of the productive sectors from Central America, we will need to work together. So we start to analyze what were the biggest challenges. And basically it was the logistic cost. In Central America, and that's the case from some countries in Latin America, there is some productive sectors where 40% of the cost structure is linked to logistics. It's just too much. In OECD countries, for example, the average is 8%. So basically, it's more interesting for some productive sectors from Central America, and I guess it's the case for the rest of Latin America, to be part of a global value chain out of the region than to be part of regional value chain. So, and we start to analyze the main challenges. It was part of those, its infrastructure. Actually, we're developing, each country has an operation with the IDB to border modernization and try to improve the infrastructure to move cargo between the region. There is another area, because that infrastructure usually is linked to 25% of that 40% I told you. So the rest is processes. And that's a big challenge, not just for Central America. I think that's a big challenge for Latin America. And so we are developing this software, which includes immigration or the migratory processes, a single window, and custom processes. We found about 450 processes that add value, try to harmonize that and try to see it as a region. And actually, one of the requirements is to fulfill the Bali Agreement and to fulfill the competitivity package of the WCO, World Customs Organization. And the other requirement is to try to understand how it's working in Pacific Alliance. And one of the requirements is that must be compatible. And that's the way we're moving. That's the way we think we're supposed to move. I find as a must that the region should try to analyze the processes, because they are different, but they are not that different. What we're doing in Central America is that we find out which is the best practice globally in those 456 processes, and try to analyze what's the gap between the best practice and what we are doing in each of the countries. So basically that's the operational plan for each country, how to move from the situation they are to the best practice. And that's not just the way we're moving and becoming more competitive, but that's a way to harmonize. And I think as a region, as a Latin American region, that should be one of the orientations. What's the best practice globally? For example, in Korea, I was in a different event in Chile yesterday, tried to analyze the cooperation between Korea and Latin America. And for some processes, our cost is about 400% higher than Korea. And so that's the way I think we're supposed to move. What's the best practice? How should we move into that situation? And if, as a region, we start to move the different countries with a different operational plan, because we are in a different situation as a country. And I got to say, I'm really happy to hear and to have been analyzing the situation with Brazil and with Argentina. We as a region in Central America, we have a requirement from Mercosur to to start to talk about a negotiation for a free trade agreement between the two regions. I got to be honest that 2 years ago, it was not that interesting. And right now, it's a main topic. We're in the middle of a negotiation with South Korea. And I think that the situation of the region is to start to align in a context where we can start to think again in moving to the same direction as a region. And I think that's fundamental to be able to decrease cost of operation, to become more competitive, to increase the possibilities to the linkages in the regional value chain, to give space to the SMEs. So I think right now it's the time to move from thinking to action. And again, I think it's fundamental to move from passionate to rational. Data-driven policy making, it's fundamental. So in general, I think that's a brief of what's happening in that subject.
Thank you very much, John. Let me just open the floor, because we have still some time, and I think it will be very interesting to hear from your questions. This, as you can see, we are living interesting times in the region, so probably there's a lot of... I'll take like three or four questions at a time. I think this was first here, and then maybe just move it here. If you could identify yourself, and if you can identify who you are addressing the question, that will be easy.
Sergei Kosteyev, Financial University, Moscow, Russia. I have a question about TPP. Well, Peru is a member, right? What about Brazil, Costa Rica, and Argentina? Are you going to join TPP in some distant future? Thanks.
Okay. TPP question.
Hi, my name is Matt Schul. I'm a reporter from Inside U.S. Trade. My question is also about the TPP, and it's to Minister Silva. You know, you mentioned that you hope that the U.S. passes the TPP. So, you know, I'm sure, and as I'm sure you're aware, that, you know, members of Congress are not happy with the outcome on the biologics sector, which was a key sensitive issue for Peru. And I know that your administration is on the way out, but I was just wondering, you know, these members of Congress have been calling for the Obama administration, for the U.S. to get improvements on biologics, for instance, by negotiating new implementation plans, or getting countries like Peru to clarify how they would implement the very ambiguous language on biologics. So do you think that Peru would be open to doing something like that if the alternative is not having a TPP at all? Because, of course, the U.S. needs to ratify the TPP in order for it to enter into force. Thank you.
I have one question for Ken and Daniel. Is this commercial dialogue in this very concrete and pragmatic way of doing things a recognition of the political economy limitations of going forward to a full-fledged FTA? Or is it that you think that that's a better strategy than having a full-fledged framework? And the question for Daniel and Miguel, and by the way, the sense of humor is back to Argentina, Miguel, which is not a small thing. It's not a small thing. So beyond the fact that I know Daniel is taking advantage of your ignorance, I just wanted to know, and this is from the perspective of the smaller countries in Mercosur, Uruguay and Paraguay, when you talk about that you are having a very intense bilateral discussion and a very modern one between Argentina and Brazil, what does it imply for Mercosur and for the smaller parties in the agreement?
Let's take these ones, and I'll follow just for the next one. So you want to start then? We just go this way.
Thank you.
Our focus has been, so I guess I would say we have separated the issue of the work we're doing and whether or not there should be an FDA negotiation. There are strong opinions on whether there should be an FDA or not, a negotiation between us. But what we have focused on is what can we do to make progress? I would say that everything we are doing is laying the foundation were there to be a an FTA. But our focus has been to say, let us do the work we can, and at least in the time that we've been there, you can, if you watch even the arc of the relationship between Brazil and the United States, we've had interesting times in our relationship, and we could continue doing work even separate from that relationship. So I would say we've separated them, but we view the work we're doing as work that provides a foundation for an FTA were it eventually to be negotiated. And Daniel, I don't know if you agree with that. I hope you agree.
No, I totally agree with that. We just don't discuss this issue there. It's not under our commercial dialogue, but I do agree that everything we're doing there can lead to a future, why not, possible.
I was missing you because I know him from the past 3 years, and he really was there with every single meeting that we had all over the world, following us, being so interested in finding out what was going on. Only compared to the Japanese press, that was really, 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 really enthusiastic about it and trying to follow us in every corner that we went to. Listen, yeah, you got any news, any news? So this is it. I mean, just imagine if we had been designing scenarios for what was going on. I mean, for each round of negotiations, we all went, the 12 countries. It's like you go to the bottle. You go with the bottle with your army. Your army prepared. Your army prepared to do the best that you can for your own country. And this is that we get together, the 12 countries, knowing and finding that all of us will like to reach the best that we want. All of us wanted 100%, but that's not possible. I mean, we've been talking about consensus. We've been talking about being flexible. We've been talking about coming back to the understanding that we all have to come to the table and find the best we can. That occurred in Atlanta at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and then we all went to Oakland and we all signed it. And now some countries already have completed the progress, like Vietnam or Malaysia, that already passed their Congress. As in the case of Peru, we are in the process of submitting from the executive to the Congress. The Congress will ratify or not ratify the agreement. We hope it will be. And this is the only scenario that we have. And as I said, in the U.S., there have been a lot of Congress favoring, a lot of congressmen in the population, obviously, as the TPP is something that not everyone can agree with that. And sometimes, not only one agrees with that because they don't understand the potential of this agreement. For the world, it would be a lost cause if we, after having gone so much to this point, that would be all losing what we've gained. So I think that in the mind of politicians, in the mind of authorities, there should be that this negotiation has been completed, bringing goods. It's an equal balance, a positive outcome that will help create jobs in the future. If this is not understood as it is, who knows what's going to happen?
Any comments, Miguel, on some of the questions?
No, I think, Ernesto, to answer your question, we think that Mercosur has a historic window of opportunity now. I think for the first time since its inception, really, the four initial members are interested in actively pursuing new trade deals. And this is something that, for different reasons, hasn't really happened before. And the rapprochement between Argentina and Brazil really is an expression of this opportunity that we see for Mercosur to move towards the world. And one clear sign of that is Uruguay's leadership in advancing the EU-Mercosur agreement. Your foreign trade minister was there last week, and Uruguay is having a very constructive and positive leadership role in moving that negotiation forward, which I think is really, really important. I mean, if you ask me what the priorities are for Argentina regarding Mercosur, I would say that the EU-Mercosur agreement is up there, together with trade facilitation within Mercosur. I think we have a lot of work to do there. And then another priority would be to find new opportunities in the global economy towards which we can work together. And I think that also answers a bit the TPP question regarding Argentina. I mean, Argentina is starting to go on the bike with little wheels, and TPP is sort of like a fighter jet. So, you know, we're interested, but I think it's not on the agenda today.
You're going to say something else, Daniel?
Just add to Miguel's points, because the questions were also addressed to me. So in terms of Mercosur, of course, we have big plans. We've started discussing just for instance, two very important issues as an agreement on investments and agreement on government procurement as well. So Mercosur agreements on those issues, as well as many other initiatives, but just to give you some examples. Of course, we have a lot of work to be done within Mercosur. Regarding TPP, you can imagine we didn't have an easy time when TPP was announced there in Brazil. People were just asking us, why Brazil is not part of it? Why, I mean, again, we're not part of the modern trade agreements. The first answer we came across with was that it was the Trans-Pacific Agreement and we're in the Atlantic. Therefore, we couldn't. We would need to negotiate with geography first. But then people didn't buy it. I don't know why, honestly. Here, what TPP means to us now seriously, is that TPP means that important players are moving their pieces along the chessboard, and we just need to do the same. And this just points us in the right direction, right? This is what we're also pursuing. We have our negotiation processes going on with the U.S., with the EU, as we mentioned before. We're exchanging offers in May, and we have to negotiate as many agreements as we can. And we have, fortunately, we have a strong calendar built right now on that.
John, do you want to say something?
Yeah, maybe just to add to that, in the Central American perspective, we as a region in Central America, we analyzed and we arrived to the conclusion that the TPP will definitely affect competitivity from Central America to our main partner in trade, which is the United States. And the most of the countries from Central America, about 40% of our trade is linked to United States. So basically, we already sent, we have been sending some requirements to become observers. At that point, it was not the right moment, but we're still waiting. And we have been talking with the U.S. government and with other governments, with the TPP, to be able to be closer to that process and to analyze the possibilities to be part of in the near future. In Pacific Alliance, for example, Costa Rica is there. When I talk about data-driven, it's basically we are using all the models that are in place right now and all the data we have available that we did in a few years ago to analyze the impact of each negotiation for the local economy in each of the regional of the Central American countries. And basically, the rest of the countries are really interested in waiting what will be the results. We are in the last stage, just waiting for the right moment to start negotiations. So, and I think probably the rest of the region will move in the same direction. And so basically, that's the issue. As a region, we understand that we need to keep moving. Otherwise, and as I said, usually to some people that it's not that clear in with that concept, if the other ones move and we stay in the same place, that means that they are advancing and they are gaining a competitivity against our productive sectors. So we need to go ahead and try to be peer with those countries.
Thank you very much, John. I have three more on the line, the second row here, then over there, and Miguel also. Here's one, second row, and Miguel.
Yep. Thank you for an excellent panel. I have a question for the Undersecretary. Talking about accumulation of the rules of origin, which is something that may be logical for countries that are feeling, you know, certain threats from low-cost labor countries that are going into TPP or other. But this has to go through Congress. And so what's the feasibility, really, of getting a bill, you know, with all the, you know, hurdles you're going to have this approved and your Congress to have another bill that allows accumulating rules of origin with the other countries that are not party of TPP? As a first question. And the second one is WTO has barely been mentioned beyond the facilitation agreement. Is there anything going on actively there?
Yeah.
It would be nice to have an update.
Very good.
We had a meeting in Nairobi.
Of course. There's another one there. Yeah.
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Rotenberg. I work for the Department of State, and I'm currently on a detail to the World Wildlife Fund. Thank you all, ministers, for being here and Undersecretary. My question is for the members of Latin America. The Vice Minister for Costa Rica mentioned the issue of competitivity. And how do you expect your economies to transition in this period where, obviously, China is slowing down, so commodities exports to China are slowing down, and at the same time, you're competing with countries like China, Vietnam, South Korea? How do you expect to create value chains that will be more efficient and cheaper, especially at a time of very cheap oil?
Anyone else wants to take the floor now? Yeah, there's another one here.
Hi, I'm Paola. I am a student at George Washington University. I'm from Colombia. My question is also kind of along with that, what is it a strategy to handle the negative aspects of trade? I know in Colombia we've also seen a lot of influx from Chinese imports that makes it more better to just import than to manufacture the part or whatever the component in Colombia. So what are some strategies that your government or maybe other governments can put in place to help those people that are going to be run over by trade?
Right.
I think your instinct that it would be difficult to pass a bill on rules of origin for the entire region, your instinct is correct. So our focus is on TPP, right? And that's we are very focused on a legislative agenda to get TPP through. As you know, we're also in the negotiation with TTIP simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So in terms of where our focus is, it would be TPP first, it would be secondarily TTIP, and a broad agreement on rules of origin, I think, would be very difficult congressional legislatively.
Any comments on the John?
The second one, WTO.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, we managed to have the agreement of eliminating agricultural subsidies, right? There was, I think, a big news last year in December that we achieved after 3 days, 4 days of negotiations. And with spending, the one that on the proposal of many countries, one of them Peru, is the elimination of fishing subsidies too, because that's creating overcapacity and really destroying small fishermen. We discussed also the TPP as being a mega regional agreement, a trade agreement, some countries are were skeptical of this, what would be happening, but the majority was also agreed on that because this is actually what the WTO was supposed to be. To have done, right? To move forward, to really show that there is an option for us to agree on certain amount of things, obviously to accelerate trade. So I think, in the APEC meeting that we're going to have in Peru in a couple of weeks, WTO is always invited, and we also will have the time to talk about more specific issues.
Let me address the two questions on competitiveness and basically helping those who lose out from trade, because I think that they're part of the same issue. And I think John, in his initial comments, mentioned the close ties that we have between trade, innovation, investment. And I think that's sort of the mindset we have to bring to this, adding a political dimension, and that's where the losers from trade come in, because clearly every time you talk about a new trade deal, there are bound to be losers. There's bound to be some sector, some company which will feel that they will lose out of the deal, and you know, the U.S. I think is a clear example of that. In the past 20 years, half of the employment in your industrial sector has sort of moved elsewhere, right? And some out of the labor market. And this has...
Coming back.
Well, the
manufacturing.
Sorry.
But I mean, I think it's a global phenomenon, right? And I think that the answer really is that we have to be very serious, very, very careful about these trade negotiations. One key issue is investment, technology, education, and we really have to look for deals that foster these drivers of competitiveness. It's very hard in the global economy to be competitive if you don't have a serious quantity of capital in which technology is embedded per worker, right? I mean, there's really no way to go. So investment by global corporations, by companies that are involved in global value chains, is a necessary condition for competitiveness. And therefore, the investment climate, a serious, stable macroeconomic environment are prerequisites for competitiveness. And at the same time, a gradualist political strategy for reform, I think, is also a part of that that necessary environment for competitiveness. I think a fantastic example is Australia in the 1980s. Australia in the 1980s took about 15 years to reform their economy from a closed, inward-looking, highly regulated economy into a globalized, competitive economy. And today, it's one of the best countries in the world to live, best living, highest standards of living, most equality in terms of standards of living amongst its population. And they did that very gradually, very seriously, looking with their competitiveness commission at how they could transform sectors, how they could specialize. So I think that really the answer is promoting investment, promoting technology and education, and at the same time doing this in a gradual and politically sensitive fashion.
Yep, your turn.
Yeah, I think it's kind of in the same direction, and it's basically, in my perception at least, and that's the analysis we did in my country, it's related to added value. How can we add more value, more national value, to the export sector? And that's a different challenge for the different countries. The agenda is going to be different. In our case, we don't export commodities. I know that some of the countries from the region, it's a big part of their exportations. And but this brings a huge challenge as a country, and I guess it's going to be the case for the region. There is a really interesting study from the IDB, another one from ICLAC, talking about the challenges for the region and the effect of the trade of commodities globally, including the situation of China. And for example, I'm going to give you some example. I guess you heard about Intel moving out of Costa Rica, the manufacturing area. Well, yes, they moved the manufacturing area, but they bring R&D. And that's exactly what we are looking for.
Right.
We are trying to move up from the, at the in the global value chain to add more value.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we are not manufacturing, we are designing. And that's really good, yeah. But that's a huge challenge. Right now, we are in a situation where, as a country, we're not able to fulfill the demand of engineers in the country. And the same happens with Boston Scientific, IBM. All the companies, they are starting to move from manufacturing to R&D in Costa Rica. And that's great, but that means that we need to transform the whole educational system. That means that we have a challenge where the people who is losing jobs in the manufacturing area not necessarily will have the capabilities to be part of the R&D hub. So it's a wonderful challenge, but a big one. And if, as a region, we want to move to the next stage in the global value chain or to increase the value added to our exportations, that means that the transformation will be big and not easy. And as you might know, to transform the educational system, it's not going to happen in 1 year, not two. So it's something that definitely we need to work in. We are developing a lot of partnerships with the private sectors, dual education and cooperation between different countries. We are happy with the results, but definitely we need to increase the effort. And in my perception, that's the challenge. If we want to not be as dependent as we are from the commodity sector, that means we need to innovate. That means we need to add more value. And that means we need to transform the whole productive sector. We call it productive ecosystems, which is exactly... And again, data-driven. I love data, so probably...
I hadn't gotten that impression.
So basically, it's really interesting. We have been working with OCD and in a neurological system. If you mix that with projective algorithms, that means that you are able to analyze the impact of each variable and to better understand what's the public policy that will bring better results for a productive sector or for a specific region in the country. And we already have the data, we already have the tools. So if we are able to analyze that, I strongly believe that we can bring the tools to the productive sectors to move to the next level and to analyze how to include to those people who is losing jobs in areas where we are not able to keep being competitive right now, how to transform that and how to include them in the next stage.
Daniel?
Just two quick comments. First, on the WTO, it was, of course, a huge achievement announced in Nairobi regarding the elimination of agricultural export subsidies. We do have to celebrate, but we cannot forget that we still have a lot to do on agriculture. We still need to discuss domestic support and a number of other issues. Therefore, of course, Brazil is willing to support every single discussion or new approach or new topic, new issue under the WTO, provided we just don't forget the old ones. We still need a lot to do there.
Second that.
In terms of competitiveness, just of course, there's no silver bullet here. In the case of Brazil, we still have a lot to do in terms of domestic reforms, such as in our tax system, labor, and so on. But then again, I would like to call your attention on the importance of this trade agenda on competitiveness in general. We need to complete this trade reform and to have more trade agreements in order to push the other reforms. This is how it works. This is how many other countries in the world did in the past in a very successful way. If you have your tariffs lowering to zero in a given number of years, you'd better run to solve the other problems you have. Otherwise, in the end of the day, you have a lot of problems. So this is how it works. And this is how we attach this trade reform to the general competitiveness reform we have to undertake.
Can you want to?
I was just going to add one thing, which is, you know, the conversation so far has been in the physical world. It really has not moved to the digital or virtual world. And part of what we will face as challenges is the degree to which continued technology advances, continued interconnectedness, people connected to the internet, the digitization of manufacturing, where the next generation of manufacturing is big data analytics, sensors, 3D printing, right? Mm-hmm. And there are a set of e-commerce, right? Mm-hmm. And you start watching percentage of sales and percentage of exports that are going on the e-commerce side. So we also have to be looking beyond the borders to where is the digital world going, where is e-commerce going, where is 3D printing going, and what does that mean for competitiveness? Or and if we don't, then, again, someone else will leapfrog ahead of us, and that's another conversation we need to be having, which, again, I think will put a new set of challenges on the trade world because it's a whole different set of issues, right, the digital issues related to trade. So I wanted to just add that as a challenge.
Is there any last word that any of you want to share before I close?
No, I'll make that my last word.
Adding to what you just said about the role of technology and how our lives have changed, right, by all of us using this thing that tortures us every single minute of the day. The other thing is that the change of the demand patterns in the world, that the global population have moved from the rural areas to the more cities. The urbanization process has been growing. The role of millennials in our world, right? 26% in the world, 36% in the Americas. So millennials will be really making a big difference in the way we do public policy. And that data combined to the role that trade has in this changing world, right? It's a different world. The physical would not be so important, as you said. And we'll have to keep not losing track of those dramatically changes that have been, as everyone calls, the fourth revolution, that will imply for us to have a different view of what we have been seeing trade so far.
Miguel, I'm good. Let me just close. We are, I think, right on time for closing. This has been a really, really fascinating conversation. I think the premise that Ernesto mentioned at the very beginning, that the time is right for this conversation, I think this has been proven that is validated by this conversation. There's a lot of common ground by traditional partners and new partners in the table. I think there is a lot of a vision of pragmatism in this, in the value of dialogue and looking for very practical answers to the problems that we have. And I think in the context of, and we are very well of that, and we haven't talked much of this, in the context of trade slowdown, I mean, this is something that we are experiencing globally and in this region, to talk about these very practical, very small steps towards further integration in the region, I think are extremely valuable. I like also the mention that has been made at the end. We have to do things that we have been doing for many, many years, like completing FTAs. We have to make sure that the ones that we have work better, trade facilitation conversions. But I think what is really ahead is what you guys were mentioning at the end, the trade agenda of the 21st century is going to be very different. We have to be ready for that. And I think there's a lot of potential that this region also makes an imprint on how to actually do that for the next few years. So really, thank you very much for this very engaging dialogue, for the questions from the floor, to Ernesto and the colleagues here at Brookings for this very good event. And thank you very much. And let's give a round of applause to our speakers.